Hi, this is Arnie Arneson, and this is the Friday edition of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson. And if it's Friday, it must be the Quorum Report. And if it's the Quorum Report, it must be Scott Braddock, also known as the Voice of Texas, the Dean of the Austin Press Corps. So welcome back to the program, Mr. Braddock.
Always good to be here with you, Arnie.
Well, it's a pleasure. So have you been, like, just have your ears and your eyes peeled on the impeachment hearings, or are you two thinking of something else you could do, like, I don't know, weed, mow, do, God, it's just been unbearable.
Well, what we call winter has settled into Texas now. You know, it's 45 degrees, Arnie.
Wow,
you know,
cold.
So it was cold, and people are in their house, they're in their homes, and they're watching television.
Yeah.
I watch these things so you don't have to, is what I usually tell people. You know, it was late into the night watching this hearing, and as we were talking about off the air, some of these speeches were a little better than the other ones. Some, you know, some are screaming, some are a little more understated. I watched it late into the night, and I'm watching it again this morning.
No, I've obviously been watching it as well. And one of the things that I was thinking about last night was that part of the reason why these impeachment hearings aren't really resonating with most of the American public is that we've actually heard a variation on the impeachment hearings all through the 2016 campaign.
Right.
I mean, nothing has changed. You know, we knew that he lied. We know that he's a crook. We know that he likes to shake people down. He does everything through innuendo. So I just feel like, in a lot of ways, this is just repetition of everything that we were aware of when he got elected in 2016. No, he didn't get elected by the popular vote, but yes, he got elected by the Electoral College.
Sure.
And that base has stuck with him because they knew exactly what they were voting for, and sadly, so did we.
I was thinking about this from the standpoint of having covered the Texas legislature for many years now,
right.
And this is sort of like, if you watch these hearings on CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, or C-SPAN, or wherever all they're showing these things, it would be like if the Texas legislature had been broadcast live all across the country when they were passing an abortion bill, for example.
Yes, of course.
I mean, this is what I tweeted yesterday, Arnie. Just imagine this scenario, if you will, what do we see happening here? A bitterly partisan legislative proceeding steamrolling the minority party with a major goal being what? Fending off primary challenges. If only I had some frame of reference for all this. The way that they've hit the gas on this toward the votes that are coming up real quick, as we tape the show here on Thursday, they're getting ready to vote in the Judiciary Committee.
Right.
In the coming days, they'll be voting on the House floor of these impeachment articles. And why? Well, look, the substance of it, like you said, has not changed. As far as the politics, the Democrats want to be able to check the box that they voted for this, right? That's why the timing is happening the way that it's happening. And then, of course, the question is what will happen in the Senate, where we have reporting now says that Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, not only wants them to dismiss the case, but that he wants the Senate to vote to say that the president is exonerated, right? And they may do that fairly quickly. So maybe we're done with all this by Christmas. We can put a bow on impeachment.
Well, let me say something that's just sort of fascinating to me, and I'm surprised a Republican hasn't said this to a Democrat. The Democrats are constantly saying, you know, get beyond the politics of this. Understand this is a constitutional thing. They keep marginalizing what the GOP is doing as being purely political. And yet what you just described about this agenda and how quickly we're moving, that's very political. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, they're both being hypocritical about each other. Nobody is rising above the politics. This is all immersed in the politics. And that's part of the problem. If it was just about the Constitution, if we were just talking about right and wrong, we wouldn't be in this position. But unfortunately, look where we are.
Well, this is why I'm comparing it to an abortion bill.
Exactly.
I went through that very quickly. So the deal is the people of Texas send a majority of conservative Republicans to the Texas legislature. And when they get ready to pass something like an abortion bill, what happens is exactly what's happening in the legislative proceeding with this impeachment. They're moving it through committee quickly. They're going to vote on the floor fairly quickly as they can. They're having what looks like a debate on television, which is what happens with the live stream of the Texas legislature.
The illusion of a debate.
They argue their points vociferously. They argue it, and they say This is not about politics. This is about preserving human life. This is about our values and all of that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
Democrats on this, it can be sort of similar. They're talking about preserving the Constitution, where they're talking about our values as Americans. It doesn't mean that the legislative process can't go quickly.
Right.
And this is not a value judgment on my part for either of them.
I'm just saying it is exactly the same.
As far as what's unfolding. Now, one thing that is sticking in my craw, Arnie, as I watch this, I want to mention it here on the radio.
Okay.
To hear Republican legislators over and over again in this proceeding say, if this were a court of law, you couldn't get away with this in a courtroom, et cetera, et cetera. It's not a court of law. It's not a courtroom. It's a legislative proceeding. And here's the thing. Republicans who are saying that either don't know better or they do know better, and they're misrepresenting what's happening. This is a legislative proceeding. It's not happening in a courtroom, and so the standards of evidence are not the same. The way that the process plays out is not the same. You can't compare the two. If it's not disingenuous, then it's absolutely at least irrelevant to keep saying that over and over again.
Let me just say one more thing. A high crime and misdemeanor is not a law. It's not about breaking the law. This is a criminal act. This is the other thing that makes me crazy.
That people don't know is that when that was written in the Constitution, it could be for treason, bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors.
Right.
The statutes of the United States in federally and at the state level had not been written yet.
Yeah.
Right. So they didn't know. So they left that deliberately broad.
Exactly.
The high crimes and misdemeanors, like all the way down to whatever. And that's why when you talk to people about this, you talk to constitutional experts, will say that, yes, the House can impeach the president because they don't like his haircut or the color of his tie. They can do that.
Yeah.
Does that mean that the people are going to view that positively? Probably not. Look at the way that President Clinton handled his impeachment.
Exactly. I was just thinking about Bill.
And what was happening then? He had not told the truth as he was being investigated about something. He had perjured himself, and so they, of course, impeached him based on that. It wasn't what he had done. It was the cover-up, right? That was the problem for Clinton. But how did he handle it? He went around the country talking about other things, focused on the economy and what he was trying to do as president for the American people. And Trump cannot do that. He can't do it because the impeachment is about him, and Trump's Achilles heel is that he makes everything about himself. With this, he doesn't have to make it about himself. It is about him.
Right.
So he goes around to these rallies, and he's talking about impeachment nonstop. Mm-hmm. If he would want to contain the political damage from this, you would think he would focus on other things. But, of course, Trump, as we've seen over the last few years now, and not just when he's been president, but as a candidate as well, he can't help it. Everything has to be about himself. And so this is that on steroids.
Well, and the other thing is, I was on Twitter this morning, and I did a hashtag Donald
Trump.
Stay
off Trump. Twitter, Arnie.
No. So I did a hashtag Donald Trump because it was relating to my tweet. And as soon as I did that, it said, Donald Trump has tweeted 80 times in the last hour. That was on Twitter. I mean, as soon as I did hashtag Donald Trump. They keep count by the hour.
Of course.
I'd never seen that before because I rarely, hashtag. But I was I couldn't stop laughing, and I'm going, oh, my God. And the other thing, let's be honest about the Bill Clinton thing. Yes, it was the cover-up. The problem is most people understood he lied about sex. And people are looking at their spouse going, so should we have a conversation about this? How many times have you lied about sex? I mean, it was so unfortunately something that every man, woman, and child could have a conversation about because it's too familiar. What Donald Trump did, I mean, I don't know who the president of Ukraine is. I can't shake down the president
of
Ukraine.
It's very amorphous. You would never be in, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it puts a lot of people in a tough position. We've talked a lot about the politics of this and the fact that with Trump, everything, because it's all about him, there's very little gray area, and there's really nowhere for anybody to hide if they're in Congress or if they're really running for anything else. Believe me, people who are running for the Texas Senate and the Texas House will be asked about impeachment.
Oh, of course.
By people. They'll want to know, what do you think about that?
Right.
Even though those people don't go to Washington, 10 of the 13 Texas Democrats in the United States House of Representatives, 10 of them have said they're in favor, but there are 3 who have not made up their minds. And guess where they live, Arnie? They live in Dallas, where you have a swing district that went from Republican to Democrat last time. Colin Allred is the congressman there. One is in Houston, where Lizzie Fletcher is the new congresswoman. Mm-hmm. She is also a Democrat who flipped a district from Republican mm-hmm. to Democrat. And down in South Texas, where Henry Cuellar is the congressman. He's a Democrat who's being challenged by one of these Justice Democrats, the AOC crowd.
Right.
And people are wondering what they're going to do. They haven't taken a firm position just yet. They're not on any of the committees that have dealt with this so far. Who knows? On the one hand, Republicans are attacking those congressmen and women and women as the puppets of Nancy Pelosi, because that's the typical attack. And by the way, when you look at private polling on that, it's pretty effective in Texas to still say so-and-so is the puppet of Nancy Pelosi. Believe me, that's an attack that works in a lot of areas. But these are Congress members who are not doing at all. They're taking their time.
Yep.
They're thinking through it. We'll see how they vote. I think that the Democrats might lose some Democrats like that from those areas. Fletcher, for example, from Houston, she represents an area that is sort of known as the cradle of the establishment Republican Party in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It's the seat in Congress that George H.W. Bush held when he was in the House. And
historic.
So you have a very different kind of Republican who lives there. At an event like that, at events in that area, I should say, you would have Republicans show up to contribute money to Republican candidates, but they might have just come from a Planned Parenthood fundraiser. It's not what you think of when you think of Republican politics. It's a genuine swing area, and so there are some of these members who are going to have to think it through, but at the end of the day, they're going to have to vote one way or another. There's nowhere to hide when it comes to this.
No, I absolutely. So, you know, but the thing is that so they're talking about being a puppet of Nancy Pelosi. So let's get to Senator Cruz. Is Senator Cruz being a puppet of Vladimir Putin? I mean, I got to explain why I said that, because you were talking about Pelosi being a puppet. So I figured, you know, when I listened to Ted Cruz talking about Ukraine getting involved in the 2016 election,
right.
I think Vladimir has said that.
Before we say anything else about this, let's make note of the fact that the president's hand-picked FBI director, Christopher Wray, has said they don't have any information to indicate that Ukraine meddled in the 2016 election. That said, here's what Cruz said on Meet the Press to Chuck Todd, who, by the way, Todd's eyes just sort of looked like dinner plates when Cruz said it. Cruz said that Ukraine meddled in the 2016 election, and Cruz said that the game that the media is playing is that, if Russia meddled in the election, which Cruz says that they absolutely did, but then he said that that doesn't mean that other countries couldn't have also meddled, and he thinks Ukraine absolutely did. Again, the intelligence agencies do not say that. Cruz, who, and it was brought up in the interview, Cruz, whose father was accused of helping assassinate JFK by Donald Trump, that was where the accusation came from. Cruz, whose wife was called ugly by Donald Trump, and all of that, Trump called Ted Cruz Lion Ted over and over again. And Cruz, who just last year, in 2018, secured a six-year term in the United States Senate, is now, for whatever reason, one of the most, if not the most vocal defender of the president from Texas. He's there saying that the president didn't do anything wrong, and then the media is coming after him, the Democrats are coming after him. Well, Arnie, you would think, and it may not be in Cruz's DNA to just not say much about whatever the topic is, but Cruz has also said in another interview previously that Trump bringing up the Bidens in that conversation with the president of Ukraine, Cruz said that was troubling. So for him to now say that it's just a lock that Ukraine meddled in the election, sort of perplexing to people. He could just kind of say nothing about this because his political future is secure for the next 6 years.
But isn't it interesting?
But for whatever reason, he is right out there defending Trump as much as anybody else.
Yeah, but he's kind of being a mugwump. He wants it both ways. He wants to basically, bring up the lie about Ukraine in 2016. At the same time, he wants to somehow look like he's not a Donald Trump, because it is troubling the fact that he brought up the Bidens. I mean, this is both sides. He's taking both sides. This is what Donald Trump has legitimized, because Donald Trump will say one thing and then 47 seconds later he'll say the exact opposite. Well, Ted Cruz is adopting that exact kind of sort of mythology. And let me just say one more thing.
Yeah.
There is something that I think Ted Cruz can hang his hat on, although it's not the same as what Russia did. My understanding is, I think it was the ambassador from Ukraine, did make some kind of a pro-Hillary statement in an op-ed. Okay.
That's right.
So you have one op-ed versus basically
right.
infiltrating the election with bots and everything else and paid media strategy and other. So the problem is, in a bizarre way, he can go to sleep because he has that one op-ed that he can point his finger to and nothing more. But that somehow legitimizes the statement that he makes.
Senator Cruz has been the beneficiary of dark money in this state, groups like
yes.
Empower Texans and
yes.
Texas Right to Life and those sorts of organizations that hide who their contributors are,
right.
Are the kinds of groups that supported Ted Cruz when he ran for the United States Senate originally and continue to support him now, although they basically focus most of their energy on state-level races of the State House and State Senate. I'm bringing that up because, Arnie, the president of Ukraine said what he said about Clinton, where he said it publicly in the media in an op-ed, right? Everybody
right.
knew who said
thank
it,
you.
Right?
Thank you.
In the case of Russia, the accusation, and has been backed up by all of our intelligence agencies,
really?
Is they did it how?
In the dark.
In secret.
In dark.
The dark.
Exactly.
That's right. So people didn't know who was trying to influence their vote in 2016.
So
that's what we call meddling. That's what we call corrupting.
That's called infiltration.
In our politics.
That's called infiltration.
But there's no comparison between. You're right. He's got this thing
yes.
he can hang his hat on that the president
so,
said something that everybody could see him say. But for all of these people who are trying to influence our elections, whether it's Russia, whether it's these dark money groups who are acting, you know, in secret, that is a completely different thing. And you really helped me put the fine point on this, Arnie, because
that's
the kind of thing that Cruz has always been okay with, is people
yes.
acting in secret
right.
to influence elections. In fact, let me say one other thing about that. When there was a Texas House hearing
yep.
on dark money and its influence, it was led by a Republican, now former chairman
mm-hmm.
Of the Texas House State Affairs Committee, a guy named Byron Cook, wanted to look into dark money and its influence in this state and whether we ought to, you know, make moves to try to curtail it. It was Cruz who said that legislators in Texas, Republicans, were acting in a pernicious way.
So
to go after secret influence is bad, but for somebody to just publicly say something, what we're going to hang our hat on.
So let me just remind everyone that hasn't Donald Trump spoken about the election in England? Hasn't he
You're
publicly
right.
made a choice about that? So what I
You're
see,
right.
this is what bothers me. This is where I get really angry at NBC and MSNBC, because in a lot of ways, by not bringing up what I just brought up with you in front of a much larger audience, you could then have Ted Cruz say, so are you telling me that you are going to use this equivalency? You're going to use this one op-ed compared to what Russia did and say it's the same? And let's talk about this one op-ed and then hold up something that Donald Trump has said about what's going on right now with the election in England, where he's made a choice. Look what he did in Israel, where he made a choice. You're telling me, well, then our president is equally guilty of meddling.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's,
my God. It just. But they have to bring it up because this is where Ted Cruz can hide. And we have to pull the sheets back and say, you can't hide there anymore, Ted, you know, because we're going to expose it. All right. Let's talk about the fact that there are so many Democrats running this time for the Texas legislature, that Democrats are even being primaried. I think that's kind
oh,
of
yeah.
that's the, now explain why I am like marveling at this.
It's remarkable, Arnie. It's a potentially significant shift.
It is
I mean,
huge.
Over the last 10 years at least, we have seen nasty, vicious primaries on the Republican side
of
in
course.
The state. And, you know, for a decade, it's kind of been my career is to cover these races and cover these fights at the legislature
career.
Where Republicans are battling it out with each other for who's
yes.
the most conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have so many combatants on the Democratic side that they're fighting with each other in Texas. You know, I mentioned Henry Cuellar down in South Texas, by the way. He faces that Jessica Cisneros was recruited by the Justice Democrats to run against Cuellar. He's too conservative in their estimation in the State House. You have, particularly in Houston, for our KPFT listeners, you have a lot of the African Americans in the Houston delegation to the Texas House are being challenged in their primaries. And I was asking some folks in Harris County, where Houston is, you know, what's going on there? Why so much upheaval in the Democratic
right.
Party? And you have some lawmakers who have been there in office for decades, and you have sort of the millennials coming up fast and
yep.
wanting to, you know, influence their politics, you know, at the
mm-hmm.
state, local, national level and
mm-hmm.
all that. And there's a whole generation who are now worried that maybe they're not going to, you know, get their seat at the table, that they're going to miss their prime. And they're kind of up, I would say they were a little frustrated with the fact that some of their Democratic representation in the Texas House is a little more conservative than they would like. So there are some more liberal, younger folks who are jumping into these primaries. We'll see how they go. And, of course, the incumbents are well-funded, and they've been there for a long time, and they know how to win their races. But it will be interesting to see, and we'll track this here on the show as we go through the through this next year, through the March primary, exactly how these things play out.
So let me just say something.
Do they want to see a new generation in office, or do they want to stay with the old guard?
Okay, so let me just say something. In a way, but primaries are not a bad thing, and we saw
no,
that.
Not bad at all.
Not only that, but we saw that in 2018. Everyone keeps saying, "But look at all the moderate Democrats that won. All those progressive Democrats lost. Those progressive Democrats brought new people into the primary process. They brought new voters into the primary process. And even when they lost their candidate, shock of shocks, those new people showed up in November and voted for the Democrat. So in a lot of ways, these primaries are healthy. They inspire different constituencies. People get excited about the candidate. The candidate gets talked about, whether it's the winner or the loser. And this is a segue for me. So I did an interview this week with some folks from Iowa about agriculture and farm and the climate crisis. And this one guy told me a wonderful story that they had written an op-ed in the New York Times. And after they'd written this op-ed about what farmers' responsibility is to help solve the climate crisis, who gave this group a call? Beto O'Rourke, when he was still candidate for president. And Beto said, talk to me. So then he goes to Iowa. He not only talks to them, but he talks to a group of farmers to explain how they understood the connection. You don't blame farmers. Farmers understand what's happening. Now the question is, how can they help fix what's going on? You know, not just contribute, as some people think that they do, but there is a way for them through carbon sequestration, a whole bunch of other things, that they can begin to fix and address the problems with the climate crisis. Mm-hmm. Beto, as a result of hearing these conversations, of talking to these farmers in Iowa, went back and changed his position papers on climate, on agriculture, because he became informed. Right after that happened, guess what else happened? A number of other Democrats read what Beto had written, read how he had changed his positions and more informed them. They all did the same thing, too. So even though Beto has left the race, he permanently changed the conversation between the 2020 candidates because he not only read an op-ed in the New York Times, he went to Iowa and said, talk to me. Let me learn from you. And that is a great achievement. That may be one of his lasting legacies in the 2020 campaign.
It's interesting. These folks can have a real impact on the conversation
on
a variety of issues. You know, I mean, think about the way that Castro has changed the conversation about immigration in the Democratic Party. He's not going to win the nomination. Maybe he has some place in the cabinet going forward. Who knows if that's what he even wants. But, you know, by jumping out there on immigration and saying, you know, this is where the party ought to be on this, it moved a lot of the other candidates in that direction, even if they don't want to make that their centerpiece issue as they go up against Trump.
All right. Last but not least, what's happened with that tape and Speaker Bonin? I mean, the reason I'm even asking that is that you wanted me to talk about the fact that Lieutenant Governor Patrick says Speaker Bonin was wrong to think President Trump is causing problems that may give Democrats the majority in the Texas House. Well, one of the reasons why Patrick knows what Bonin said is that I believe that was on the tape. So I'm kind of curious what happened to the tape and how is Speaker Bonin moving, even continuing to exist, even in the Speaker's position, even though you meet every other year?
Yeah, he's done. He's in office, but he's lamer than the lamest of ducks. I mean, he's just not able to do anything. They have no special session of the legislature.
They're afraid to.
Lined up, but he is retiring.
Okay.
And so there are five candidates who have lined up. Four Republicans and one Democrat have lined up to try to take the seat south of Houston. It's a solid Republican seat, so I think you'll see another Republican there in that seat from Angleton, Texas. Look, Patrick, our lieutenant governor, and the Trump campaign chairman for Texas, Dan Patrick, was asked about that comment that he, I think it was Bob Garrett from the Dallas Morning News, had asked Patrick, what do you think about what Bonin said on that tape?
Exactly.
That Republicans are in trouble in the suburbs.
So revealing that tape.
President Trump. And here's the irony, Arnie. Patrick said, I don't see that as you know, as a statewide candidate. I travel around this state and I listen to people. I don't see that. I don't hear that. I think any Republican who moves away from President Trump is being foolish and making a mistake. The thing is that Patrick said that while he was standing next to James Dickey, who is the chairman of the Republican Party of Texas. And just this past week, the Republican Party of Texas had a memo leaked from their office that said exactly that, that they have candidates in the suburbs who are in trouble because of President Trump. And they're trying to figure out how to combat that.
Oh, liar, liar, pants on fire. And on
it's a conversation Republicans only want to have privately.
Exactly.
They don't want to do it publicly because guess what? You don't want to incur the wrath of President Trump. More importantly, you don't want to incur the wrath of the Republican base, that 35% who is always going to be with President Trump.
Which is why we love the fact that Scott Braddock makes sure that those quiet conversations happen in a public setting. And on that note, if it's Friday, it must be The Attitude with Arnie Arneson. And if it's Friday, it must be Scott Braddock, the editor of The Quorum Report. Thank you so much. I always adore these conversations. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Arnie. I'm going to go back to watching the impeachment.
Oh, lucky you. You can do it so I don't have to. All right, stick around, everyone. We're going to be talking about LLCs. No, it's more than a letter in an alphabet. We'll be right back.
Helping fish survive an urban gauntlet on this CurrentCast. One-sixth its former size, the Milwaukee Estuary is a patchwork system broken up by shipping channels, shoreline development, roads, and bridges. Ecologist Mike Merrick of Merrick Landscaping says to get from their spawning beds to Lake Michigan, juvenile fish have to swim through shipping channels.
There's no food or shelter. Also, there's heavy predation in there, so adult fish are there.
Merrick says there's no way for small fish to escape, so he's installed four man-made islands designed to mimic a natural system, so fish can rest, hide, and eat before finishing their journey. He says not only fish, but birds, frogs, and butterflies are using these oases. CurrentCast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
Spit it into a bottle and sell it to me. I'm looking to buy freedom from my sobriety. Just like Huey Lewis, I need a new truck. I need a new drink. I need a new truck that does what it should. So take me to the bank. What we work so hard to afford, but take
Welcome back to part two of the Friday edition of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson and producer Dave Scott. Joining me in studio are two people I've known for a long time. Olivia Zink is the executive director of Open Democracy, and joining her is the deputy director of Open Democracy, Brian Beal. A little sidebar, I've known Brian since God knows how many years ago. He started at this radio station with me as the first station manager. So he's come a long way, and now working for Open Democracy, I think, in a way, some of the things that we talked about on the air, Brian, related to things like, you know, good government and clean government and campaign finance reform, maybe in some ways inspired you because now you are in the thick of it.
It is still fighting the good fight, no matter how you slice it.
It is unbelievable. It is unbelievable. So we were talking about dark money with Scott Braddock, and you had sent me a press release, and I was aware of this, but I wasn't following it as closely, in part because of things like impeachment in 2020. And this doesn't just relate to New Hampshire, because a number of states have the same situation. So this is really an opportunity for us to sort of learn together about how corrosive money is in politics. But let me start with the press release that you sent me. And the headline goes this way. New Hampshire Campaign Finance Group blasts use of dark money, LLC loophole by donors and campaigns to cheat on donation limits. To cheat. Well, that's exactly the definition of dark money. It is to cheat. Trust me, if it wasn't cheating, you'd be seeing it. If it's dark, it's because they don't want you to know. And you begin this way. The latest filings by 2020 candidates for statewide office show that they exploited the use of the limited liability corporations, LLCs, which you'll hear a lot of, to evade the state's campaign donation limits by individuals. So I'm going to start first with you, Olivia. And that is that what the hell is an LLC? So people are going to hear this term of art, and it has no meaning to them. So the fact that they're using some kind of a corporate status to avoid people being aware of the donations they're making doesn't necessarily compute. So tell us what an LLC is and why it is so useful for people that want to make these dark money contributions.
An LLC is a limited liability corporation, and many people use this loophole to write multiple checks on days. So we have seen in this last filing that there were 22 LLCs that donated to Governor Sununu, totaling $147,250.
Okay.
And these are mostly controlled by six people.
Okay, so let me go back to the LLCs first, because before we get into what, you know, exactly they did bad, are LLCs only created for the purposes of dark money, or are LLCs created for other purposes? You mentioned that they were controlled by six people. It sounds like these are kind of faux LLCs, that they, you know, they sound like maybe they're an LLC for real estate, or they sound like they're an LLC for, I don't know, food something, but in reality, they are a fiction that are being created for the purposes of funneling dark money. Is that what you are suggesting here?
That's what we see through some of this research. Some of these are look like they're not even registered. So some you can register, you can create these LLC entities for $50 at the Secretary of State's office. Some of these entities are registered, and some of these are non-registered LLCs. And when you're creating fictional organizations to funnel money into elections to evade campaign limits, there's something wrong with that picture, and citizens have to be deeply concerned how people are gaming the system. The rules are already rigged, and they're using these rigged rules to funnel additional money to buy influence and access to
okay,
our politicians.
Let me flip to Brian. So what I'm hearing, Brian, is that an LLC, I thought that if you were a limited liability corporation that you needed to file it, you needed to form it financially, you know, in a way with the Secretary of State's office. But now I'm hearing that there are two kinds of LLCs. There's the real LLC that you actually do all that filing with, and then there's the one that you sort of wake up one morning going, let's create an LLC. Nobody needs to know how we did it, why we did it, but we're going to do it because it turns out it's convenient for dark money. So I didn't realize that there were two forms of LLCs. One sounds like a joke, and the other one sounds real, but how do you know the difference between the joke and the real?
Well, you have to do your homework, for one.
Oh, my God.
I mean, because you got to really get into the weeds to
right.
find out who these people are, who they're controlled by. And I'll give you a couple examples of that in a second. So, you know, by definition, an LLC, they became popular because they're really cheap to set up,
right.
Easy to set up. You know, LegalZoom will mm-hmm. do one, as
oh.
Olivia said, for, yeah. you know, $50, right? So it makes it really easy. So I think in most cases, most of the ones that we've seen in our research are actually existing, exactly what you described.
Right.
They're existing LLCs.
They file with the Secretary of State. They file with the IRS,
right.
all those things.
Right. So in the case of Brady Sullivan, mm-hmm. which is one of the major developers in the Manchester mm-hmm. and all over New Hampshire really mm-hmm. now, they create an LLC for every one of their properties.
Okay.
So part of that is limiting their liability, right?
Right?
We don't want to be on the hook for anything.
Right, right, right.
Right? So they create those, but then this is a convenient way
mm-hmm.
for if Arnie, you're running for governor.
Mm-hmm.
And
I've done that before.
So I know.
Yeah.
And so I want to give you Brian Beal wants to give you $7,000,
the
maximum.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, I'm doing the math. $7,000 from Brian. Gotcha.
Okay. And, gee, I really like you, Arnie. And I'd like to give you even more money.
But that's illegal. You can only give me $7,000, Brian Beal. You wouldn't do something illegal. Oh.
Well, my campaign people tell me that there's this way to maybe get around that
$7,000.
And
way
maybe
to get
if we use
okay.
one of our business entities,
mm-hmm.
I have this LLC over here that could also give you. Which is a person, right?
Oh, that's right. A,
right?
Limited, a corporation is a person. Remember, Mitt Romney taught us that.
Right.
Okay. Keep
so,
going.
So we can take and have that person,
LLC,
air quotes,
right.
give you another $7,000. Okay.
So Brian gives me seven as Brian. Then Brian gives me another seven as the LLC, but it doesn't have Brian's name next to it. It has the LLC's name. So technically it's not Brian, it's the LLC, except it comes out of the same cash.
So there's a I'm going to give you a live example of that.
Oh, good.
Okay.
A live example.
A
I love
live
it.
Example.
With a pulse.
So there is a family in the greater Portsmouth area.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Mark Stebbins and his wife.
I know the Stebbins. Yes.
And they are the principals in Procon Construction.
Mm-hmm.
They are also partners in a hotel mm-hmm. chain that is an LLC.
Okay.
Called Schleicher and Stebbins Hotels LLC.
Wow.
So Mr. Stebbins gave his $7,000.
Mm-hmm.
His wife gave her $7,000.
Well, they're separate people.
They are.
Right.
And
okay,
they're entitled to do that.
Of course. I know. She's a girl. He's a boy. He's got a pulse. She's got a pulse.
Right. And the hotel LLC gave them $7,000.
Oh. But he controls the LLC.
Correct.
Okay. But it's not his name, technically. It's LLC.
It's an LLC.
Right.
And one that's not an LLC is a Stebbins Architects Incorporated in
mm-hmm.
Manchester,
mm-hmm.
also controlled by Mr. Stebbins.
Mm-hmm.
So when you add all this up, they've given $28,000 to Governor Sununu's campaign.
Well, then that makes a fiction of limits. Because if the limit was $7,000 and they're able to give $28,000, they technically have legally complied with the law, which is the 28, but they actually haven't done what the intent of the law was, which was to limit them to $7,000.
Which is why we call it a loophole.
It is very – now, I'm just kind of curious. So, Olivia, is New Hampshire unique in this LLC loophole, or have other states embraced it as well? So the conversation we're having could be coming to a state near you or actually exists right now in a state with where you live.
Yeah, this is actually not unique to New Hampshire. There's been a big lawsuit in New York around this limited liability loophole.
Yeah.
And we see that these loopholes exist in a lot of different places, which is why it's important that we as citizens are vigilant to how campaign finance reporting is. We're doing the work to go through these reports, see these loopholes. But this law was changed this year. There was a bill on the governor's desk to close this loophole, which he vetoed.
That's because he's running again, and he likes $28,000 and not $7,000. Get with the program, Olivia. I mean, come on. Corruption is me. Why close a law when I can get dark money? So I just want to share something with my audience, is that when you sent out this press release, because you go through the donor tabulation, you show people the LLC, you do the computing that Brian just did for us in real time with the Stebbins, so we really do understand it. At the Seattle Law Review, there was a phenomenal, phenomenal article about the LLCs. And, I mean, he talks about New York, which is just grotesque in what they're able to do. Mr. Cuomo. Anyway, and yet he wanted to focus on New Hampshire because in a lot of ways it was easier to understand. We are a small state. And one of the reasons why I think it's really important to understand that if New Hampshire can expose the rot, can maybe address the rot, can show a governor who vetoes it because he likes the rot, you can actually connect the dots in a way. And because we play such an important role in presidential politics, I think it's a way for people to sort of get the story coming out of here and suddenly realize, wait a minute. You know, we may be worried about Russia and what they did in the 2016 election. We don't even need to worry about Russia. We need to worry about LLCs because we are being infiltrated by dark money, but they have a New Hampshire address. So they have a New York address. And the problem is that it's technically legal, even though it avoids the intent of limits.
Now, what we haven't talked about is why people do this.
Yes, I would love to know why.
Because it's all about how much I like you, Arnie, as a gubernatorial candidate, right? Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Or how much I want to influence you so that you pass regulations or you veto bills that I don't like.
Now, in the case of
is that a quid pro quo?
Oh,
I don't know. That's now a new term of art that we all know about.
So the winner in New Hampshire is both mayor and gubernatorial candidate Ted Gatzes, former mayor of Manchester, who I think he amassed $260,000 of money from LLCs, most of which was the usual cast of characters, Mr. Stebbins, Brady Sullivan. Mm-hmm. There were other and they've been used by Democrats as well.
Right.
But these, if you're a developer and you're trying to curry favor, or if you're any kind of business and you're trying to curry favor with a candidate.
I think real estate has got some real problems. I keep thinking about Donald Trump. He was in the real estate business and a lot of money came in through dark shadows. So I feel like this is something where it's – and it's actually very easy to be an LLC if you're in the real estate business because, as you pointed out, every single entity that you create can be separated and can be a limited liability corporation. And therefore, nobody's going to question why you have 25 LLCs if you own 25 properties, because it makes sense to limit your liability. It also then makes sense if you want to make contributions, because now you have 25 bites at the apple as opposed to the one just by your name. And this is prevalent in other states. I think Washington, D.C., didn't they just close their loophole? I think they may have. The state of New York has not closed their loophole, and you can drive 12 Mack trucks through that loophole. So this is really, I think, problematic, because in a lot of ways, you understand why corporations exist like this to protect people's liability, but they shouldn't be used as a way to funnel dark money. Am I right, Olivia?
Yeah, and I think that for your listeners out here who are outraged by the use of this way of funneling money, they need to know, as a voter, we want government to work for people, not for these limited liability corporations that are funneling money. And so our system is rigged and broken, and we as citizens need to demand that we change the way the rules are written so that our voice matters in government, not just the voice who are funneling money through these companies.
Well, you know, let me just say something. I'm going to bring this into the 2020 campaign just because it's important for me. There's something positive about Mayor Bloomberg. And he's going to run for president. And he's going to spend anywhere from $500 million to $1 billion. But guess what? We know where it's coming from. There'll be no dark money in the Mayor Bloomberg campaign because it's all coming out of his portfolio, okay? The problem with the LLCs is that there will be a lot of other people that may be running, both Donald Trump and other people, where they could then use this, create the illusion of having all this money coming in, and then you're finding out that it's not coming in from multiple sources. It's coming in through one source. Because one of the things you point out in your press release, and you also point out when you started looking into the LLC donations, there may have been, I'll make up a number, 50 LLCs. Basically, six of them, or six sort of chunks of them, have the same address, seem to come out of the same, you know, with the same handwriting. And it turns out that they're even so obvious, they don't even try to look for a different post office box. They all use the same address because they know nobody's going to look and no one's going to care. And you know why? because technically it is legal, Brian. That's part of the problem. They don't care whether they can be obvious about it, because as far as they're concerned right now, it is legal. But then it also gives you an opportunity to show the voters how corrupting it is.
Now, in most cases, like on the federal level, there are limitations on what corporations can give directly to candidates, mm-hmm. right? So it's in the states where this has been exploited. Mm-hmm. Now, we're talking about a corporate ban bill mm-hmm. that would be proposed for 2020 in mm-hmm. in the New Hampshire legislative session that would not eliminate corporate donations, but would require them to go and put it into a PAC, political action committee, so they couldn't give it directly. Now, it's somewhat of an improvement, but certainly not what we're looking at. But the Supreme Court says we can't ban it altogether.
Right.
So, you know, that's one of the ways that we can address it. The as we talked about, the LLC, which was SB 156 this mm-hmm. last year, that got vetoed by the governor. And that one had been attempted in numerous times, and it keeps getting shot down.
So let me ask a couple of questions. We just did an interview with Texas, and one of the frustrations is that even Republicans are beginning to realize that there is a negative aspect to dark money, mm-hmm. that it can swing both ways, all right? It can be your friend today, and then it can be your enemy tomorrow. And basically, really what it is about keeping the individual on a short leash. And it's their leash, okay? And if you know that it may hurt your constituents or maybe some other reason for you not to agree with whatever that contribution wants, you're suddenly going to find out that in a lot of ways they can pull that string and then you're stuck, you know, doing something that you know is wrong. So a lot of Republicans are even beginning to worry that dark money is beginning to hurt them as well. It isn't just about transparency. It isn't just about letting voters be voters. It's about realizing that it's actually restricting their ability to be malleable and to manipulate sort of even the political process based on what they see, not what the contribution wants to make. So I have a question about the LLCs. You said that federally you're not allowed to do this. But can you give money through an LLC to the state party?
Yes.
Yes.
Right? Does the state party give money to the national party?
Yes.
Oh.
And it's really interesting because you can also...
I want people to track the dollars because once it is dark, it goes into a lot of places, but those places can then legally donate to a federal campaign. They can legally donate to the national party. They can legally donate to other things. And it turns out that what you've now done, it may be one extra step, but still what's happened is you have funneled your financial influence and everybody knows it.
But I think the laundering, Colorado has closed their loophole. Colorado, you cannot give corporate money to politicians. But Colorado corporations can give money to the New Hampshire Democratic Party. And then the New Hampshire Democratic Party can give it to candidates in Colorado.
Oh,
and so this sort of money laundering scheme that you just discussed, it's not just the LLCs. It's much deeper than that. And that's why we need a whole new system. We need to have candidates that are accountable to people and not following this whole, the rules are rigged in such a deep way that we just need a new system of how we elect individuals and how we do campaign finance reform.
Well, what you're telling me is that it has to be a 50-state solution because all you need is one weak link. That's all you need. And then it becomes an opportunity to channel the money through that weak link. So if you can't get it through Colorado, you get it through New Hampshire. If you can't get it through New Hampshire, you get it through New York. If you can't get it – and think about New York. Oh, my God. I can't even imagine the number of LLCs in New York because New York is the home of Wall Street. You know, and if you want to make sure that your candidate gets money and you know that they've been shut out in one of the other states, the way you do it is you make your donation through New York and then New York makes the donation through whatever vehicle they're going to use. So Brian, what was the logic of Governor Sununu when he vetoed the bill that passed in the House and the Senate, number one, that would have basically shut down the LLC loophole? And before I get to his veto, was the LLC bill passed by a bipartisan vote? That's kind of what I'm getting. Was it strictly down Democratic? This is where I get so upset because I want people to see that this should really not be a partisan issue because it really could come back to hurt you either way.
We did have some bipartisan bills, but this wasn't one of them. Yeah. The LLC loophole bill was mostly along party lines. And they, in fact, were whipped to by party leadership to vote the way they did.
Right.
I would say on both sides. But
right.
Now the logic. So if you read the governor's veto statement mm-hmm. on this bill, and there were two or three bills that were cited as a chilling effect on free speech, because money is free speech.
And
right?
Dark money is even freer.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
I love it. Darker, the freer.
Our founder, Granny D. Haddock, said if money is speech, then speech ain't free.
Yeah, exactly. And, good line, Doris.
so that was the main reason right. for the governor saying, I like free speech. Free speech makes money in my bank accounts, and therefore, party leadership of both parties, as we talked about, they like this.
Yeah.
Voters don't like it.
Yeah.
Even the candidates have to sometimes plug their nose because that's the way that people want to give money. That's the way this bundling works.
But we only have a few minutes left, and this is the part that really sort of breaks my heart. Because in a lot of ways, what the GOP gets is they get it both ways. They get to veto the bill, but then because a lot of Democrats have talked about this, they've talked about transparency, they talk about, money should not be speech, then they basically don't want to embrace the LLC loophole because they know they've already talked about how nefarious it is. They've already talked about the lack of transparency. So the Republicans are celebrating the fact that they're going to get bucket loads of money through this dark loophole, the LLC loophole. And Democrats are really between a rock and a hard place because they have just said this is a bad thing. This is corrosive to politics. I don't believe in it, but I'm going to take it anyway. And so it becomes a win-win for Republicans. They constrain the Democrats' use of an LLC because they want to say, no, I'm above this. At the same time, what they've done is they've allowed it to basically continue to exist, and they've claimed that it's free speech. It makes it even more insidious in a lot of ways, Olivia.
You're right. You're absolutely right. It does make it insidious. But we have seen both sides of the aisle use this loophole to line their campaign accounts with money. And we get it. You need money to be elected. But work harder to get money from people and voters, and don't use these loopholes to amass large bank accounts full of cash, cash.
So I'm going to end this way. I remember many, many years ago having a big fight with former Senator Bob Smith, U.S. Senator Bob Smith. And we were talking about money in politics. And what Bob said is, look, I don't care how much money people give to me. All I care about is transparency. That was the old logic. Now it's, I don't care, period. It's not about transparency. It's not about bucket loads of money. It's not about where it comes from. Now it's just, as long as it arrives at my desk, I'm not going to ask a question how it got there. And that, to me, is what makes this not only bad for politics, bad for democracy, but frankly, it makes it immoral. I'm just going to tell you right now. So I want to thank both of you for coming in, Olivia Zink, Brian Beal, with Open Democracy. This is a story not about New Hampshire. It's a story that exists in so many states. Do we know how many states have this LLC opportunity that's still existing? I know it's being fought in New York right now. I know that D.C., I think, recently passed a bill so that it wouldn't happen. But I'm just kind of curious whether it's – and as we pointed out, it doesn't matter. If it's still just one state, then all that dark money can be funneled through that one state.
I want to say that 17 states have now put some restrictions on LLCs.
Right.
Now, it's a nationwide thing. I mean, all 50 states are – having to deal with this because its origins are really in IRS regulations.
Right, which is what formed the LLC.
Correct.
Right.
But the states have been really slow. And as you described, politicians who like it aren't going to do anything about it.
Last but not least, you mentioned at the very beginning, and I want to make sure I understand this, that there are LLCs that officially file with the Secretary of State's office, with the IRS, whatever, but then there are some that are just created for $50. How can that be considered an LLC, and why couldn't you challenge the ones that have never really, you know, filed with the Secretary of State, that have never actually filed with the IRS? How can you say you can't be an LLC unless – I mean, these are – that means I could pick up any alphabet I want and claim that that's what I am, when in reality, I am not that. It's a limited liability corporation. If you're not a corporation, if you don't do anything and the only reason why you exist is to launder money, you can't be an LLC. How come that has never been challenged?
Well, it's very interesting because I think this dates back to 2010 when John Stevens ran for governor. In one day, and I remember it because it was my daughter's birthday, $18,000 was funneled through multiple companies. And I checked many of them, and they weren't registered in New Hampshire. They weren't registered in Delaware. They weren't registered in Massachusetts, which is the address on them. I didn't check all 50 states.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things. You have to check all 50 states to say, where are they registered? And it's a lot of work. And we do not have the enforcement needed to do forensic accounting of these campaign finance reforms. And that's why they get away with it.
So it's called complicated on purpose. And on that note, this is the Friday edition of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson. That's why you love Friday. From Texas to New Hampshire, it all is dark and rotten. We'll be back next week. Ciao. You better think.